Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast. NFL Week 3 on the docket, and we have plenty of big matchups to get to. Of course, before we get there, I am your host, Todd Furman, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague and co-host, the one, the only Payne Insider.
Morning.
Good morning, kind sir. Have you been able to navigate your way through two massive point spreads this weekend?
Which ones are you talking about?
Your beloved Dolphins that find themselves about 17 touchdown underdogs on the road in Dallas. And, of course, the New York Jets, who are about to get fucked with Luke Falk making a start in Foxborough against the New England Patriots.
I kind of feel like Luke Falk's better than Trevor Siemian, to be honest with you.
He's got a higher ceiling, I would think. I mean, maybe Gardner Minshew mania and the fact that Mike Leach now has two disciples as starting quarterbacks in the league is a sign of things to come.
Spent time on the Dolphins practice squad as well, so it's not a complete noob to Adam Gase's system either.
Yeah, interesting when you look at some of those numbers. We'll touch on those games quickly. Not obviously going to get a lion's share of our focus with a lot more intriguing prospects out there. Payne, before we get into the games themselves, though, and kind of talk about what we may or may not have seen Monday night between the Jets and Browns, a little housekeeping, and our second contest winner of the season is...
Definitely going to butcher this guy's name, but congratulations to Dolph Saplansky. He is the Week 2 Bet the Board 5K contest winner, won a perfect 5-0, and was closest to the Monday night tiebreaker for total points. So good for Dolph. His Bet the Board swag pack is on the way.
Encourage all you folks, even if you miss a week of picks, get them in. You can still go 5-0, walk away with small parting gifts, and take full advantage, as you know, to win the season-long prize. Better aim your sights awfully high and hit that 70% threshold. We've seen some guys get off to a torrid clip to start the campaign. More so pain than what we saw to the New York Jets in a football game that may have set the great sport back years with that 23-3 debacle. Obviously not a lot of takeaways, but did you see anything from the Browns that we can use going forward, knowing that's going to be one of the marquee games we'll get to later in the show?
We're getting to it later in the show. Yeah.
All right, that's easy enough then, see?
I kind of want to touch. Everyone's bashing my guy, Freddie Kitchens. I don't understand what's going on. Needs to be a little more organized. Let's put it that way. That's the easiest way to put it. A lot of guys doing their own things. Needs to be more organized. Needs to kind of rule with a little bit more of an iron fist, laid back guy. So the discipline, I think, is what's lacking. And we've seen that with the penalty yardage. I believe they have 125%. More penalty yards than the league average so far. So that's got to get cleaned up a little bit. But I saw people busting his balls for having Baker out there and throwing passes late. There's a little bad blood, obviously, in that game. And Greg Williams has been running his mouth about deserving to be the head coach of the Browns. So I think that's what that came down to. But I kind of wanted to ask you this, and I started throwing some texts out there to guys that I know that, you know, obviously – coach and players of that sort. It's got to be like a packaged based system thing, because it wasn't just Freddie Kitchens this weekend that had weird end game situations with who he had in the game, right? And again, people were busting his balls because Chubb was running the ball late, but you can go to guys like McVay and Sean Payton in the Rams Saints game. We've kind of talked, right, all season long, we're not really sure what Todd Gurley is, and in like a 27-9 blowout, Gurley's getting the last couple carries. Like, you have Brown, you just drafted Henderson in the third round. Why aren't those guys being used as the workhorses late when the game's already decided? Same thing with the Saints, right? Sean Payton's looking over at Drew Brees, fucking fingers falling off. Teddy Bridgewater looks horrific, and he's got Taysom Hill, his backup quarterback, out there blocking and running routes in an 18-point blowout on the last possession. So it's not just Freddie Kitchens, but I know it was Monday Night Football, so there's a magnifying glass on him as opposed to a blowout game on Sunday.
Yeah, I'm just surprised that many people were still glued to the edge of their seat with the point spread long since decided, the over-under never having a chance to sniff if you were holding an over ticket in that game. So the fact so many people wanted to try and see how the Browns handled the end of the game situation, a little bit surprising. Like we said, though, we will get to the Browns in greater detail. One of the marquee matchups we have on the docket for you today is they take on the Rams. Encourage everyone out there to follow Payne on Twitter, at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You, of course, can follow me there as well. But most importantly, follow the podcast, at Bet the Board Pod. So, Payne, the game of the day takes us to Arrowhead between Baltimore and Kansas City. You were looking at the Chiefs, a 6.5-point favorite, total in this game, 52.5. And when we look at the historical context here, Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes are going to be the only quarterbacks in the Super Bowl era to have a 70% completion percentage, 7 passing touchdowns to no interceptions over the first 2 games of a season, going head-to-head. And you look at these two guys, both off to pretty quick starts. Patrick Mahomes' numbers, of course, are a little bit better given the level of competition. Wins against the Jags and Raiders on the road. Patrick Mahomes did what you'd expect him to do against an Arizona Cardinals and Miami Dolphins defense, but clearly these two guys poised to be the face of the position going forward. When you look at the matchups out here, who has the edge against the respective defense come Sunday?
Mahomes, baby. Keep those prices ticking up, by the way. God, I love Mahomes. Anyways, let's start with the Chiefs, and I'm intrigued to see what the offense looks like. I have question marks, and I think you do too, because we've talked off air. We're going to find out what the Baltimore Ravens defense is. And if you look at kind of both the data points so far this season, you know, the Ravens are top 10 in defensive efficiency, right? We are toying with the idea of not including any Dolphins data points this season. It's really something we're contemplating with. I know we started this idea potentially on Sunday night. So if you do that, suddenly you're going to have some questions about, you know, Don Martindale's Baltimore defense. And I think we had some questions coming in to the season, right? Linebacker is extremely young. You lost CJ Mosley. Now you're down Jimmy Smith. You're out Tevin Young, who was lost before the season. And the Ravens secondary was exposed by Kyler Murray in his first road start, right? And Murray didn't have any help from the ground game. And you look at Kyler Murray, 7 explosive passes. He had a high aggression percentage, and he still completed more passes than his expected completion percentage. You do want to give Kingsbury some credit, right? The Arizona's offense looked drastically different than it did against the Lions. Way more motion, way more pre-snap movement. But if you can't handle, you know, Kyler in his first road start at home, it's going to be interesting to see how you handle this test. And we just know, obviously, how dynamic the Chiefs offense is. Even without Tyreek, right? He's only played about half a game so far this season. Mahomes has 14 explosive passes. 20% of his overall attempts have been deep shots, and he's got the 3rd best passer rating on deep throws. So it's going to be a challenge for Baltimore's defense. I think the glimmer of hope here, obviously, is, you know, Chiefs are without their left tackle, Eric Fisher. We know Tyreek's out. Damian Williams and LeSean McCoy are both pretty banged up. Damian trending towards, you know, not playing. So that's something to monitor. Maybe we see some Darwin Thompson this week. I know Andy Reid loves him, right? Claims the potential's through the roof. Doesn't
free
quite
Darwin,
trust.
Baby. Free Darwin.
Doesn't quite trust him yet as a blocker. So once the pass protection improves from Darwin Thompson, and it could be as early as this week, I think we see an increased workload there.
The interesting part about that game, too, is if you read some of the Ravens' comments after their performance against Kyler Murray, one where they kind of had a hang on for dear life with the Cardinals marching up and down the field, just seeing a number of drives stall in the red zone, is they talked about miscommunication. And for me, I know Earl Thomas and what he does, kind of playing sheriff in that defensive secondary. It's a cause for concern when you go on the road against a team that may use some tempo. They're going to take the deep shots. You mentioned Patrick Mahomes. 4 of his 7 touchdown passes this year have been for 40-plus yards. So clearly without Tyreek, they're still taking their shots downfield. I think it'll be very telling early on if Baltimore has some miscues, a lot of pre-snap reads, window dressing, and Kansas City can get things moving forward, because then ultimately it'll put pressure on Lamar Jackson and the Ravens offense. And the one thing we haven't seen from them yet, Payne, is the ability to play from behind if Kansas City gets out to a quick start. They're facing a double-digit deficit. Does Lamar have the confidence at this point where he can bring this team back if they're down multiple scores?
You hope that you're not down multiple scores, right? That's the game plan. But you're right. I think they're going to see a lot of window dressing from Andy Reid, especially with those young linebackers. But if it comes to a point where Lamar has to throw, I don't see an issue at this point, right? I mean, the guy's setting the league on fire, both running and passing. He's doing exactly what we knew he could, right? Which is run the ball, averaging 6.5 yards a carry there. He's on pace for over 1,000 rushing yards. But the thing I thought me and you kind of told the world and to expect this season, and the national media didn't think Lamar could do it, that was throw the football. And again, extremely small sample size, but Lamar Jackson's graded out the best passing quarterback heading into week three, right? Ravens offense, number one in explosive passes. Lamar leads the league in average air yards per completion at 8.7. So, you know, I think that there is real potential for Lamar to continue this success as a passer. The offensive line has done a great job, kept him extremely clean. Ravens O-line's only allowed 8 pressures, just one of 3 offensive lines to allow less than 10 so far. When you look at how he can attack Kansas City's defense, and you look at that Chiefs unit through, you know, 2 data points, I think the defense appears to be getting a little bit better. They're average right now, right? That was our hope for them. Go from bad to average. And that's probably all you need for Kansas City, because that offense is so potent. The secondary does have issues. If you remember, or maybe I talked to you about it, I can't remember if I said it on the podcast, but there was a reason why the Chiefs were major players in the Minkah Fitzpatrick trade. And they just couldn't pony up enough, right? So they were trying to get him. So they know the secondary is a little bit of an issue. But you look at Spagnuolo's defense kind of in totality, better against the run. Defense has allowed 49% of passes to great successful, though. Chiefs secondary is 23rd in explosive pass defense. I think, you know, we can probably agree Lamar Jackson current form is better than both Gardner Minshew and Derek Carr current form. Okay. So, you know, for Kansas City's defense, I still think it starts with limiting Lamar and even Ingram on the ground. And the 4-3 defense, I think, helps with that a little bit, right? They've adjusted the Chiefs defense to a 4-3. And it's nice having Jones in the middle and Clark set the edge. But again, if you can't stop the run, then this is going to be ugly. But I think that's the first starting point. And if you look through 2 weeks, the Chiefs have shown about an 11% improvement in rushing success rate allowed versus last season. And, it, you know, with this team, it becomes even more important. There is some weather coming in potentially that could help slow down Lamar in the pass game, help your secondary out a little bit. 58% chance of rain, about 15 mile per hour wind is well at kick. So obviously worth monitoring. But yesterday, that's why we saw the total come down off the 55. The two guys that the Chiefs need to focus on a little bit here, Lamar seems to be building a pretty nice relationship with obviously Hollywood Brown, but also Mark Andrews. If you look at 28 of Lamar's 41 completions have gone to those two guys. So I think it's important that, you know, this is a Deron Lee game. This is why you signed him, right? To kind of defend and help defend the pass against really good tight ends. This should be a game for him. But Kansas City has allowed 17 receptions on 21 targets to tight end so far. So that's something to monitor a little bit as well. But that's where Lamar likes to go with the football so far this season.
Should be one hell of a game. Clearly, we know what to expect from Kansas City, or did coming into the season. Baltimore, a bit of a surprise as far as some of their casual football fans are observing. We know they took some sharp money over their win total earlier. A lot of that attributed to the schedule. And when you look at the Ravens, recent history suggests this team has kind of thrived as an underdog. 7-3 against the spread when they're installed in that role. Over their last 10 games, they've also been road warriors, compiling an 11-4 against the spread record when they go out on the highway. Colts, Falcons, Payne, Indianapolis, a 1.5-point favorite, depending on your preferred shop. Total on this game sits at 47. And one of the big stories out of the Colts win against Tennessee, and it was a common story against the Chargers. You never talk about kickers on this podcast, but if you're Frank Reich, are you pulling your hair out with Adam Vinatieri given his early season struggles?
It's been tough so far. And I thought everyone assumed he was going to retire, but that wasn't the case. He says he's back at the practice field, getting the demons out, he said. That's what he said this week, so he certainly cost him games. There's no question about that.
We'll have to see when they get into those situations, whether it's early in the game for chip shot field goals or late in the game for pivotal extra points, if they can rely on their special teams. When we look at the Atlanta Falcons, this is a team that's had the second highest no-huddle rate in the league so far this season. Big questions when we look at the Atlanta offense matched up against the Colts defense, and I think that's probably the best place to start. First things first, Payne, Darius Leonard, do we think we're going to see him out there anchoring that Colts defense? Went into concussion protocol. And more importantly, do the Colts have the athletic secondary they're going to need to slow down the likes of Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley, who doesn't appear to have any missteps as far as the sophomore slump's concerned?
You know, we'll know more on Darius Leonard, and I don't think it's a thing of having information at this point, right? It's the concussion protocol. You have to follow it, and that usually takes through Friday. So we'll see if he passes those tests. He's obviously a key cog, and it'd be a big missing piece if he's not out there. You mentioned the Falcons' no-huddle rate. It doesn't seem to be working right now. Atlanta doesn't seem totally in sync. And I think the majority of that is on Dirk Koetter and Matt Ryan a little bit as well. There's a complete lack of a ground game. And, you know, I get that, you know, you played the Vikings defense at their place and the Eagles defense that we thought would be drastically improved this season. Although the injury bug seems to hit Philly once again, but they're just not getting any help from the ground game. Matt Ryan hasn't been good enough either. Just making, you know, ridiculous mistakes that a veteran quarterback shouldn't make. His interception rate, 4.5 times more than it was last season. You look at the Falcons overall, rushing success rate 5% below league average. Below average in explosive runs. Maybe that changes this week. I think that's kind of the matchup to focus on. Obviously, Atlanta has great receivers. That's your goal, limiting those guys before the game. Right? But you need help from the ground game. You look at the Colts through two data points, they've been pushed around a little bit in the trenches, 30th in adjusted line yards. And it's 2019, so I'm not, you know, suggesting Atlanta goes out and runs it 50 times here. But I think, you know, how the Colts defense was constructed, it was built around Andrew Luck, right? You know, Frank Wright and the offense kind of being really potent and getting out to leads. So defensively, like Chris Ballard built that defense on speed. You know, you go out and get Justin Houston to get after the quarterback. You assumed because you're going to be leading in a lot of games and opposing offenses would be, you know, forced to throw in known passing situations. So I think, you know, the point is when you look through the early sample, in addition to the Colts, again, being 30th in adjusted line yards, 24th in rushing success rate defense, and they've also allowed 20% of run plays against them to grade as explosive. The goal should probably be to establish the ground game here a little bit. You know, to me, it's no surprise when you look at how they're built, where the Colts defense has been really good so far. And that's getting to the quarterback. 34 pressures, 19 hurries in two games. Indy's third in adjusted sack rate. Where Matt Ryan has struggled through two games, right, is when he's under pressure, completing 52% of his passes with a 39 passer rating. Four of those, and they're pretty ridiculous interceptions, were when he was having pressure in his face. So again, to me, it's does Atlanta get their ground game going? The matchup kind of dictates that they try that. Devontae Freeman needs to step up. I hope he still can. I'm not sure if he got old too fast or what happened, but, you know, Devontae Freeman's been a ghost, 7% below league average in rushing success rate. So whoever it is, Devontae Freeman, Ito Smith, has to be complimentary to Matt Ryan in the passing attack.
Folks are out in full force wanting to see a more concerted effort for Dirk Koetter to get the ball to Ito. We'll see if this is a week where that worm starts to turn. But as you mentioned, maybe Devontae Freeman still working himself back up to game speed, or you'd like to hope he's got a little bit more left in the tank. When you talk about ground games, though, clearly that's how Indianapolis has chosen to go about their business this season without Andrew Luck. 370 yards on the ground through two games compared to less than 300 yards passing. And when you look at the Falcons so far, Payne, again, only two data points. They rank near the bottom of the league in big run plays allowed, while the Colts are tied for second in big run plays of 20-plus yards and tied for first in 40-plus yards. Marlon Mack has been the guy, but we saw Jordan Wilkins fill in. He had a 55-yard run in the fourth quarter that was kind of backbreaking for the Tennessee Titans. Will the Colts continue to find sustained success running the football behind that very talented offensive line?
I think if Marlon Mack is in the game, right, there's question marks concerning his injuries this week, so something to monitor there. I like the Colts offense probably more than most, right? And I kind of want to start here. And obviously, like, Jacoby Brissett isn't Andrew Luck, right? We expected this certain level of decline in offensive expectation for Indy. And you know, how you gauge the steepness of that decline is likely how you bet Indy the first two games. And so far, you know, I think sharp guys are ahead there, and they're 2-0 against spread because no one really believed there was this 6-point downgrade from Luck to Brissett. And, you know, when you look at something as basic as points per game, I think there's a lot of noise in Indy only averaging like 21.5, 22 points, right? You mentioned Vinatieri at the top. He's missed 2 field goals. He's missed 3 extra points. Eric Ebron dropped an absolute dime of a touchdown in the Chargers game. So there's easily like another 16 points there. I think Jacoby Brissett is more than capable, right? And you really try to lay this out on what he is, and you paint it this way, and suddenly I think people start to wake up because he is more than capable, right? With a team that was worse around him, a, you know, worse coaching staff around him, a significantly worse O-line protecting him, all while learning this brand new system because he was traded to Indy on like September 2nd in 2017. Despite all those factors, Brissett led the Colts to 9 fourth quarter leads. So this isn't like some stiff back there, right? And you look at Indianapolis as a whole, they're 13th in offensive efficiency right now. I think that's a good place to be. The offensive line is moving people in the trenches. 57% of the Colts' 67 rush attempts have graded successful. It's 8% above league average. Without question, though, the Colts' offense is missing that explosiveness, that element to the offense. Part of it, though, is Frank Reich's system, right? It is built and has been built on more down-to-down success and efficiency than it is like bombing the ball down the field, you know? Part of it, though, is on Jacoby Brissett, right? It is kind of, you know, when you look at the knack on him, he's a little slow to process things, right? Needs to read it, then see it before he throws it. You know, there's not a lot of throwing with anticipation, which is what leads to these explosive plays. And so that's probably the knack on Brissett, right? Dead last in the NFL, averaging 5.1 air yards per pass. So he's got to be a little bit better with that. And again, back to the offense, it's like, you know, we have to monitor Marlon Mack. He has been fantastic, hasn't practiced yet this week. He is the Colts' bell cow. And that's really how you're going to want to attack the Falcons' defense as well. They're not very good, 19th in rushing efficiency. I am still intrigued to see what this Falcons defense looks like when they're healthy, right? Everyone's pretty much healthy. That's all we've heard all offseason after 4 years of Dan Quinn pissing down his leg. This was going to be the year that they made that stride. They haven't been tested, though, right? And I think they will in this game. Cousins only attempted 10 passes in week one, right? And before, I think, Todd, me and you got back from the fridge grabbing a snack and a beverage, both DeSean Jackson and Alshon Jeffrey were out in the Sunday night game. So
Philadelphia clearly didn't have their host of healthy weapons. That's for damn sure on Sunday night.
Yeah, and then you get lucky on the drop pass on the final drive. If Nelson Aguilar catches that ball, he's probably still running today on Thursday morning. So, you know, I want to see if the Colts O-line kind of continues to be dominant. And so not only are they just doing a great job in moving people in the ground game, the pass protection has been pretty good as well. You know, despite Brissett being like slower to pull the trigger, and he has far less pocket presence than Luck, Colts are only allowing about a 26% pressure rate through two games. So I think the Colts are going to be okay here. Obviously, we have seen steam on Atlanta. 3 on the bye was the price of one specific better, partly due to the Marlon Mack situation, partly due to the Darius Leonard situation. I don't think the final say on this game has made its stance yet. We'll see where the market goes.
Speaking of the market, you have a couple games starting to move before our very eyes right now. Not ones that we're going to cover on the podcast, so we'll leave that to listeners to try and uncover on their own. Chargers Texans late
given
afternoon.
You've given me ADD now. I'm glued.
I figured we'd lose you for a few seconds. Chargers Texans, a pivotal game in the AFC, as both these teams have aspirations of winning their division and, of course, getting to the postseason. You're looking at the Chargers. We'll call them a 3.5-point consensus favorite. A lot of 3 minus $1.20 out here in the desert. Total on the game, 47.5. I mean, the Texans pretty fortunate to escape the Jaguars in one of the uglier games of NFL Week 2. The Chargers completely flatline against the Lions, done in by 2 costly turnovers, one from Austin Eckler and an interception from Phillip Rivers, despite the fact they won the yardage battle and the yards per play by a pretty pronounced amount in that contest. I guess, Payne, when I look at this game, it's going to boil down to one relatively simple and straightforward factor. Which team can more effectively stop the run? The Texans and Chargers, both top 3 in the league in yards per carry.
It's a good question. Probably determines this game. It feels like Groundhog Day every time we talk about the Houston Texans, right? It's like this wildly talented team just led by a lackluster head coach and staff. And they do just enough to get by in a poor division because of like extreme luck. You know, last season the Texans had the easiest schedule in the league. This year, luck retires, falls, gets injured in the first half. It's time to do something, right? And not just like waste Watson and Hopkins. Anyways, the matchup on the offensive side of the ball for the Texans, it's going to come down to trench play. You know, you nailed that. There was a switch made by the Texans offensive line last week. They started their backup left tackle, Roderick Johnson, at right tackle in place of Chantrell Henderson. He was serviceable. You know, the two draft picks, Titus Howard hasn't been good at left guard. Max Sharping hasn't even seen the field yet at right guard. Tunzel, obviously, you know, not worth the assets they gave up for him, but at least there's some pieces, right, that you can work with. I want to see what this O-line looks like moving forward with all these new parts once you can kind of mold them together. Through two games this season, the pass protection is the same old story. Deshaun Watson's been pressured on 51% of his dropbacks. There has been a lot of improvement in the run game. The blocking's been pretty good. I'm not totally buying into it just yet, but it's worth mentioning that, you know, Houston's fourth in adjusted line yards, second in rushing success rate. It is a two-game sample size. And then you look at who they played, right? Like the Saints were without Rankins and David Onyemata in the middle. Jacksonville's defense, you know, just kind of continues to underachieve a little bit, and they've had some issues even when they were good stopping the run. But if Deshaun Watson has time, I think he should be able to make some plays. The Chargers secondary is without another starting safety in Adrian Phillips. I think there's some real opportunity for the Texans offense. You just look in general. Chargers right now 31st in rushing success rate allowed, 24th in passing success rate allowed. They've given up 10% of passes to grade explosive. And that was, again, against Brissett, who we mentioned had like the lowest average air yards per attempt. I think there's some opportunity here if Bill O'Brien is somewhat competent here, okay? The Chargers defense, I don't know if they're going to be able to provide some resistance. Obviously, Bosa and Ingram, they just went against two really good offensive lines, probably two of the better ones, right, against the Colts and Lions. They're probably chomping at the bit here, but there's got to be more help, right? Past those two guys, there really hasn't been much help on defense. You look at the pressure rates, Ingram and Bosa are responsible for nearly 70% of the quarterback pressure so far from the Chargers defense. These other guys like Casey Howard, Desmond King, Denzel Perriman, who is good to go this week, so that is a good get back. Thomas Davis as well. Those four guys need to step up their game, help up, you know, Bosa and Ingram. So far, that just hasn't been the case defensively for the Chargers, and they haven't been very good on that side of the ball, despite, you know, what the scoreboard said last week against the Lions.
How concerned are you about this Chargers secondary? You mentioned the injury to Adrian Phillips, broken forearm. We're not sure if we'll see him again this season. And you look at the guys that are going to have to fill in, Jaylen Watkins, Rayshon Jenkins, and then maybe some Roderick Teamer back there. If they can protect Deshaun Watson, which is always a big if in regards to the Houston Texans, I have to imagine, Payne, you're going to see plenty of Will Fuller and deep shots being taken to try and really put that Charger secondary on skates.
Yeah, absolutely. I, you know, kind of mentioned that the secondary is a little bit banged up, and we're already, you know, Adrian Phillips is a guy that's out, and you've obviously already lost Derwin James for the season. And you talk about those deep shots right now, Deshaun Watson, 20% of his pass attempts have been deep shots. So that sets up for this Texans offense to maybe hit a few explosive plays. It's just on that offensive line to keep him upright and give him time. And some of it is on Deshaun a little bit. You know, you watch some of this film, he's having issues diagnosing sometimes. So the pressure is on him. He's not audibling. He's not shifting protection. So some of it is on him, but most of it is on the offensive line. But if he has time here, I think he's got a chance to be real successful.
Other side of the ball, Phillip Rivers, only the second time in his last 18 games that he didn't throw a touchdown pass. As I mentioned earlier, two costly red zone turnovers from the Chargers kind of did them in on the road. When we look at the Houston Texans, Whitney Mercilus appears to have turned back the clock, or fountain of youth, say what you will, has taken the opportunity provided for him and actually looks to be a disruptive force yet again. J.J. Watt, who was absent in the performance against the Saints, I think a lot of that had to do with the Saints' offensive line and their schemes, clearly a disruptive force. When I look at Mike Williams and knowing how much the Texans struggled in the secondary last week, it didn't show up on the scoreboard, but you saw the Jags receivers have a little bit of opportunity from a physicality standpoint. Do we think the Chargers can have some success running and throwing the football against this Texans D?
I'm not a huge believer in the Texans defense, but this is definitely going to provide a better understanding of what they are. I think we all have questions about that Houston secondary. Right now, they've allowed 51% of passes to grade successful. The run defense has allowed 19% of runs to grade explosive. J.J. Watt, you know, is seeing a slew of double teams with Clowney now moved on to Seattle. D.J. Reader and Merciless have certainly benefited from the Watt double teams. But J.J.'s hit the quarterback just one time in two games. So he's going to have to get pressure on Phillip Rivers here. And I think there's opportunities to be had against the Chargers O-line, right? It was a unit that we didn't think was great coming into the season. Russell Okung, the left tackle, is out with blood clots. So certainly some opportunity here for Watt and that defensive line to get after Phillip Rivers. But if the Texans can't get pressure, again, like their secondary is going to be in a world of hurt. Keenan Allen was back at practice on Wednesday, so that was a good sign. He's been, you know, he always rests the knee a little bit in the middle of the week. He's been fantastic so far, you know, averaging 3 yards per route run. That's actually sixth among receivers with at least 10 targets so far. You mentioned Mike Williams dealing with a bit of a knee issue also. He should be a go. I know he caught the big explosive 47-yarder against the Lions last week. They felt better about him and his prognosis after that. He showed some burst, showed some leaping ability there as well. So the knee checks out okay. I think the Chargers are also probably going to have some success targeting Austin Eckler out of the backfield. You look at what Houston's doing there defensively. 13 receptions allowed to running backs for like nearly 9 yards of completion and a touchdown. So I'm not a Romeo Crennel guy. That was obviously on full display on Monday Night Football, whatever defense he was choosing to run on the last play. Got very conservative in the second half, despite only being up 14-10 against Drew Brees. And that offense said, hey, we're just going to play a lot of prevent and zone here. I don't like anything about this coaching staff at all. It's as pleasantly as I can put it, Todd.
Hey, it's a very nice way to say it on a Thursday morning, so I'll give you credit for that. When we look real quickly at what the number, both side and total, tell us in this particular game, one of the more fascinating matchups of the weekend, I texted you, I said my initial inclination was that the underdog had some value. The more I dug into it, I soured a little bit on the side. What do we think about what the market's telling us, knowing the fact that the Chargers really have no home field advantage, or at least in theory shouldn't have that built into their numbers?
You know, this year we've kind of increased a little bit, right? They've been playing there now for a little bit, and so you get acclimated to the facility a little bit more. You get acclimated to the environment a little bit more. So, you know, we're using 1.5 now as the Chargers' home field advantage to start this season. So, you know, it did open 3. We're now kind of out to 3.5. I don't really have much on this. This game has a ton of high variance, right? That's the thing that's really interesting. And the other thing that I've kind of noticed so far, when we talk about the Chargers, while the offense has kind of always been really efficient, they've been extremely slow moving. The pace so far has jumped up a little bit to start the season, especially when you focus on the first half pace, which again, we always talk about is the game plan, is the how they want to dictate, right? It's not kind of adjusting things based on the scoreboard. So we have seen, at least through two games, a little tick up in tempo from the Chargers offense. It was a team that always had tricky totals because they were so efficient, but they ran so slow. But that hasn't really been the case. Houston, when I look at what they're doing offensively in pace, they are above average as well. So I'm not really sure which direction this total is going to head. I think we're, when you look at 47.5, it's probably the right number here.
Interesting game for sure, which will lead into a fascinating watch on Sunday Night Football as Cleveland will play host to the Los Angeles Rams. Right now we're looking at this game, let's call it 3 a consensus, plenty of 3-20 for the road favorite here. Total in this game, depending on where you shop again, 49-49.5. And this note I found very fascinating, Payne, it came from NFL Research. The last Sunday Night Football game in Cleveland was September 14th, 2008. Back during that time frame, LeBron James hadn't won an NBA title. Baker Mayfield was 13 years old. Sean McVay was 22 years old, coaching wide receivers in Tampa Bay under Coach Gruden. And the NFL Red Zone channel didn't even exist. So little to say, it's been quite some time since Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth have had to make their way to Lake Erie.
I could have lived back then just perfectly fine.
I'm afraid to
I'm not an NFL Red Zone Channel kind of guy.
Well, that makes two of us, but I don't think our listeners would echo our sentiments. I'd have to imagine if we put out a poll that, what do you think, 55 to 60% of our listeners watch NFL football on Sunday exclusively through Red Zone Channel?
I think it's quite possible, yeah. See, I kind of want to see the big old uglies in like a one-yard run at midfield.
I think for what we do, you obviously want to try and watch their games in their entirety. You can't just watch from the 20 on in, but I can understand for people that have a lot more vested interest in fantasy and just want to kind of see scores and quick fix and don't have multiple televisions at their disposal.
Did you watch Hard Knocks, by the way?
I watched the first three episodes and didn't have it in me to watch the fourth.
Yeah, it was really bad this year. But you mentioned McVay was 22 coaching in Tampa. Did you see that interaction with him and Gruden? Did you see that on Hard Knocks?
Yeah, it was it was pretty entertaining that they were able to go back and get that footage.
He looked like he was 12. It was like a lot of yes, sir, no, sir. It was really funny.
He doesn't look like he's an old man now by any stretch of the imagination.
No, but he looked like he was 12 there. He's like, what is this guy doing on the sidelines?
Hey, every now and again, you got to bring your kids to work and give them an opportunity to thrive in that kind of environment. And so we've seen how McVay has really taken off in that role. I guess, Payne, when we look at kind of opposite ends of the spectrum, we have a top five rushing offense against a bottom five rushing defense. And you look, since the beginning of last season, the Rams are the third ranked rushing offense, 140 yards per game. The Browns, 29th ranked rushing defense during that time period, allowing more than 132 yards per game. We look at Cleveland. They've allowed three or fewer points against the Jets and recorded four sacks, just the second time in the last 20 seasons for that franchise, and it was the largest margin of victory since Week 10, 2014. I give you all of that to ask you this. Did Cleveland show you enough, or do you have enough faith that the Browns can pull off a season-defining win for the short-term Freddie Kitchens tenure?
Short-term Freddie Kitchen tenure. Are you projecting, or are you just saying he hasn't
been
there?
No, I'm just saying he's only coached two games so far as head coach.
I know you don't like him anymore. What happened?
I did not say I didn't like him. I did not
say
that.
Talking all this crap before the show. Should let our Cleveland fans know.
I think offensively he is fine. I think he may be a little bit over his skis as it pertains to a head coach in the National Football League. At least for now, the jury is still very much out. He'll have 14 other regular season games to prove me wrong.
And we did kind of position it that way on the offseason podcast, because going from tight ends coach to head coach was quite the leap. I think the Browns defense could have some success here when I looked at that matchup. I can't get over what McVay is doing for Goff right now. There was someone on social media that put together like a few pre-snap clips of Goff during the Saints game. He's literally just like waiting at the line of scrimmage for McVay to read the defense and then send in the play. It's kind of embarrassing, actually. And there's no doubt like someone's going to make a spoof clip of this and like, I don't know, doctor it up with like Goff making like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich or something while he's waiting on McVay to like do the dirty work. I'm not a Goff guy. And, you know, if you look at some of the numbers that display on prominent websites and like what casual fans look at, I'm sure Goff looks pretty good. But I don't see it, right? And you look at game one against Carolina. Rams offense, 4.6 yards a pass. Lacked zero pop. Like they just had nothing there, right? Two explosive passes by Goff. In the first half against the Saints, Goff was successful on 28% of his passes. It wasn't until the second half, right, when like Goff knew Breeze was out of the game and the Saints offense couldn't really hurt them. So if he made a mistake, it wasn't a big deal. Once that pressure was lifted from Goff, he starts chucking the ball all over and, you know, efficiently and freely. He was pretty good. He's not my cup of tea at this point. And, you know, we've talked about the Rams, I think, every week so far, right? We've talked about them in week one and two. This is probably going to sound pretty repetitive, right? But it's just so important to factor in. Goff just isn't good when he's pressured. His completion percentage is 37% when he's pressured. And, you know, there was massive loss this offseason with the interior line. And so you didn't re-sign John Sullivan, your center, or Roger Saffold, your guard. And again, it's extremely small sample size, but Goff's been pressured on 43% of his dropbacks so far this season. Last year, that number was 25%. Austin Blythe, the right guard, hasn't practiced yet this week. God forbid if he's out, you now have three key cogs in the middle of this offensive line that are removed from last season's Super Bowl run. And you look at what the Browns do very well, and that's get after the quarterback. 36 pressures in two games. Garrett and Vernon have been awesome. They're responsible for 50% of those pressures. We talked about this just on Monday night, right? Steve Wilks loves to send heat, right? Dials up blitz all the time. 51% of the time in 2017 when he was with the Panthers, 46% of the time in 2018 when he was with the Cardinals. Expect some heat, especially if Austin Blythe's out.
This will be the first time, if Austin Blythe is out, that since Sean McVay took over, he doesn't have one of his starters on the offensive line. So if that's being the case, do the Browns have enough defensively to slow down the Rams' ground game and make them one-dimensional, forcing Jared Goff to beat him on the road?
I don't mind the Browns' defense on the interior. I really don't. I know Lev Bell kind of got going. Most of it was catching balls out of the backfield. Obviously, the one thing about this Rams offense that a lot of people don't understand is, like, you know, you think Sean McVay and it's throw it all over the park. A lot of it is predicated on being able to establish the ground game first. And whether that's Gurley or Brown or, you know, who knows, maybe Henderson, they did draft him in the third round. We'll see if that eventually materializes, right? When you look at Cleveland so far, they've been just kind of middle of the pack in success rate stopping the run. I believe 50% of runs have graded successful against them. So that is an area that they need to improve upon. And I think that's how you choke out any Rams game plan first. If you can force Goff to throw without the threat of run and get pressure on him, you see what happens, right? You get a Super Bowl performance. And that's the goal. Choke out the ground game, make Goff a passer and get after him. And that's the equation to beating the LA Rams.
Other side of the ball, we know that Cleveland has some concerns of their own on the offensive line, and that's not exactly a place where you want to have question marks going up against Aaron Donald, knowing the one-man wrecking crew that he can be. You look at this Browns offense, 11 pass plays so far this season. Of 20-plus yards, only Kansas City and Baltimore have produced more of those explosive plays. We saw the highlight reel run and catch from Odell Beckham where he wasn't defended by a single jet anywhere in the zip code. This Rams secondary has been good. We know when they're healthy that they can shut you down and kind of really clamp down in that regard. They've only allowed an NFL low, one reception longer than 20 yards, and opponents are managing just 5.52 yards per reception, third fewest in the league. How do you see the Browns offensively matching up with what the Rams want to scheme on the defensive side?
More importantly, have you recovered from that catch and run?
I have not recovered from that catch and run. I received a text
message.
Rumor
has it you were going to start out 2-0 in this.
I received a text message from my opponent that was salt in the wounds. And no, my team has not recovered. I go from 2-0 now to 1-1 with a major showdown this week against one of my TV counterparts in Cousin Sal. So it's do or die time in the fantasy football ranks.
There you go. Browns offense needs to be better. Right? I mean, Baker Mayfield just isn't doing it right now. And that's what it's come down to from what I've seen. He is sailing balls all over the place. And, you know, you look at his adjusted completion percentage among quarterbacks that have played in both games this season. He's 24th. He's got to be more accurate. He's got to do a better job of reading defenses, knowing where the ball should go. Right? And I think if he does that, the offense is going to take off. But there's a lot of change here, right? I know he's still got Kitchens, but he has a new OC, got a few new weapons. But I think the biggest thing is here, we knew this coming into the season, that Cleveland was getting all the hype, so they're going to have a target on their back. And the schedule of passing defenses that Kitchens and Mayfield and Beckham and whoever else were facing this season was going to be one of the most difficult in the NFL, especially the first 10 weeks. And if you want to kind of paint this picture, the schedule of pass defenses, the first 2.5 months, Cleveland's schedule is roughly 30% more difficult than the second toughest schedule of pass defenses faced. So I didn't expect this to be like the greatest show on turf initially, right? Positive news is he gets Higgins back practicing this week. That's a good sign. That's the number three option. He's got a large catch radius. They seem to have a nice rapport. That's big. I think you also need to focus on getting Chubb more involved, get Hilliard more involved. Both those guys catching balls out of the backfield. We know what McCaffrey did in game one against the Rams. You look so far, Rams have allowed nearly 9.5 yards per completion and 3 touchdowns to running backs. The O-line needs to be better. You kind of mentioned that at the top. They got to start moving people around in the ground game. Give Baker some help. Cleveland's 24th in adjusted line yards right now. When you look at how Carolina attacked the Rams, very successful moving it on the ground. 5.5 yards a carry, 57% success rate, 5 explosive runs. You can move the Rams around in the ground game. And so I think, you know, we've talked about this a few times. The loss of Sue is going to hurt a little bit. Donald obviously returned in the game on Sunday, but not 100% in this one. You mentioned the Rams secondary. They've allowed 1 explosive pass all season on 78 attempts. I think there's probably a little, I don't want to call it phony. Certainly the secondary is good when healthy. And they've got some veteran guys back there now, but you played Teddy Bridgewater. Oof, not very good. And Cam so far, right? And you look at how those two offenses are built and what they do schematically, and it really hasn't been about stretching the field so far. So, you know, that's the thing here. The other interesting part of this matchup, we know how great Aaron Donald is. He was largely responsible for the Rams having the best quarterback pressure rate last season at about 40%. But the Browns do have a very good center in J.C. Treader. He has put together, you know, 3 great seasons right now. He's grading out as the 3rd best pass blocking center so far this season. That's the big matchup on the interior. And when you look collectively, I know the Browns' offensive line hasn't been great. They've been responsible for, you know, a lot of penalties. They haven't moved anyone in the ground game, but they have only allowed 17 pressures so far. So that is the positive sign. If Treader can handle Darnold one-on-one, I think it's a good sign for Cleveland's offense.
I know this is a game where you're going to see probably a clear division of pros versus Joes. Different, much different handicap, I would assume, with the number sitting at 3 before we talk about potentially books being forced to go to the hook at 3.5.
Yeah, 3.5 would certainly make this game a little different. No doubt about that.
So interesting game, Sunday Night Football. We'll see exactly where the Browns are, and I think a lot of people are very curious. Yes, you get that first win in the Freddie Kitchens era against the Jets, but clearly it comes with a major asterisk. No one really calling the Jets a Super Bowl contender the same way that we'll be talking about the Rams and their role in the NFC. 4 games down, 1 to go, and of course it is the Thursday Night Football affair. One truly for the diehards, with Tennessee on the road against Jacksonville. 3rd straight year we'll see these two divisional rivals match up in primetime. It's Jacksonville, a 1.5. We'll call them a 1.5, 2-point favorite. Some 2s starting to populate in the market. Total in this game, 39. Biggest story out of Jacksonville, Payne, obviously your boy, Jalen Ramsey. Will he stay or will he go? How much does that kind of off-field distraction impact the way you want to handicap anything pertaining to the Jaguars and the short week?
Listen, when it comes to that side of the ball, it's been a distraction for 2 years now. And I've talked about that on the preview podcast. I'm surprised that Calais Campbell, who's a veteran and a locker room leader, hasn't been able to keep that side of the ball quiet. But listen, it is what it is. He wants out. His agent has requested a trade, but he has come out. And although it wasn't the greatest press conference, if you're the organization, I probably wouldn't allow him to play. But he said he's playing. And one thing about him is he likes money. So if he's on the field, it's going to be 100%. So it is what it is at this point. You know, this Jacksonville defense for 2 years now has underachieved. They don't like the system that's being run, and they've made it pretty well known. So at some stage, something's going to have to give. Either you're going to start trading away your talent, or you're going to find a new head coach. That's where Jacksonville's at right now.
Yeah, I mean, this is a Jags franchise that's now lost 12 out of its past 14 games, 0-2 for the first time under Coach Marone. And you look at them offensively, clearly the Titans have had their number. The Jags have amassed a grand total of 41 points over the last 4 meetings, allowing for a shade better than 10 points per game. So when we look at Jacksonville defensively, hey, we know where this team is. We know a little bit about that. We saw Gardner Minshew make his NFL starting debut. Didn't do anything exceptional. Didn't do anything that would be a cause for concern. Was merely average. 45 of 58 to start his career for 488 yards, 3 touchdowns. Quarterback rating just shy of 112. He's also shown a little bit of mobility, running the football for more than 60 yards. If you're the Tennessee Titans, what do you need to go out there and really make a rookie quarterback's life miserable on a short week in his home debut?
Probably the same thing you did to Baker Mayfield. And that's where this game gets difficult, right? I think it's a pretty tough ask for a rookie quarterback on a short week against a Vrabel defense that's extremely multiple. He's going to show you things that aren't what's actually going to unfold. And that's what he's learned from Bill Belichick. And we've kind of talked a little bit about Titans defense maybe being a little bit overrated. And that's probably because of their style, which is bend but don't break. But I think in a game like this on a short week against Minshew, there's going to be a lot of disguises defensively. And when you look at the offensive line for Jacksonville, they've been extremely shaky. You know, Minshew has, I think, to this point, been fantastic, right? He's been pressured on 41% of his dropbacks, and he's got a 114 passer rating when pressured. So kind of kudos to him there. At the same time, we haven't seen much of a vertical threat out of this offense. And we know DJ Chark's a burner. He's been pretty good so far. But the one thing about Gardner Minshew is we know why Mike Leach loved him at Washington State, right? It was because of his accuracy. And, you know, he's been fantastic with that too. You look at quarterbacks that have played in two games so far this season. Minshew has an adjusted completion percentage of 86%. Only Dak Prescott has a better ADJ. Okay. Where I think the issue with Gardner Minshew lies a little bit is with the arm strength. And so you look at some of those metrics through six plus quarters of play against two below average secondaries in Kansas City and Houston. Minshew has the fifth lowest air yards per pass attempt. So if you're not going to threaten the Titans vertically a little bit and you're going to try to live in the box, it could be difficult, right? And we've kind of talked about home teams on the short week having a built-in advantage. So far, I've seen a little professional money actually on the Titans, which is pretty interesting.
Do you believe, and I know we talk about this all the time, we saw Tampa go on the road last Thursday night and beat Carolina, that the home teams, yes, they generally have that little bit of an edge. Their travel schedule is not disrupted. But when you're talking about teams within the same division with such a high level of familiarity, that some of that edge is neutralized for the home team?
I believe so, and it's partly what we've seen. The largest impact of that familiarity in the division games on Thursday usually impacts the total most. Right, because no one's designing anything on a short week or going to be throwing in like these massive wrinkles. You know who your opponent is. You know what they do. And you're not expecting anything too extravagant. And so when you have those matchups on Thursday night with the short week and the two familiar opponents, usually it lends pros to looking under in these games.
We mentioned the Jacksonville defense, and while they've underachieved, no greater illustration than what Derrick Henry was able to do against them on Thursday Night Football last year, where he went for 238 yards and four touchdowns on just 17 carries. Marcus Mariota, nothing to write home about last weekend against the Colts. He was constantly under pressure, really didn't perform when he did have time in the pocket. If you're the Tennessee Titans, how do you go about attacking this Jaguars defense? Is it just as simple and straightforward as a steady dose of Derrick Henry? Or do you want to see more from Marcus, knowing he's a little nicked up, that maybe he's got to use his legs to provide a separate element?
All of the above, right? I mean, these two units are the massive underachievers at this point, right? I think we're still waiting for Mariota to take the next step, you know, grab the bull by the horn, so to speak, and make the pieces around him better on offense. He hasn't done that. And I think we're still holding out hope that Jacksonville's defense returns to its 2017 form. Just two units that continue to underachieve recently, right? And I think when you look at Mariota through two data points, it's been a ton of dink and dunk. You know, 9% of Mariota's throws have been deep. He's bottom five in air yards per pass. And, you know, with those two metrics, you'd think, hey, you know, Mariota's completing a ton of short stuff. He's actually 20th in adjusted completion percentage. He just needs to be better, right? You can't be 31st in passing success rate and 23rd in explosive passing and expect to consistently win games in the NFL in 2019. And when you take it one step further, you have this massive workhorse in the backfield in Derrick Henry, right? And he's faced eight-man boxes 33% of his carries, which is sixth most in the NFL so far. Henry's delivering a success rate 7% better than league average. He's averaging 2.7 yards after contact. Imagine what that would look like if defenses didn't get the cheat run and actually respected Mariota a little more, right?
So you're telling me it should just be Derrick Henry, give him the ball 35 to 40 times, use him as a battering ram, and force the Jaguars to stop him and hold him to less than 5 yards per carry.
I mean, there was like an opening play from Arthur Smith in last week's game where it was that little RPO, and Delanie Walker is just streaking open over the middle. I mean, there isn't a defender within 5 yards of any side of him, and Mariota parks the thing 4 yards behind him. It's just, it's really weird. When you look at this matchup, I think it's important that Jacksonville's defense stays disciplined in the rush lanes. You kind of hinted at this. Mariota may be using his legs a little bit more. So you want to keep Mariota in the pocket. And for whatever reason, Mariota's maybe identified something in Doug Marrone's defense, because in the 8 games against the Jags, Mariota's tucked it 46 times for over 300 yards. So, you know, I think in saying that, though, like it's important for Mariota to kind of use his legs. I know he's dealing with a quad issue, which you kind of hinted at a little bit. The Titans O-line still without left tackle Taylor Lewan, obviously. So I would expect some pressure. That's kind of the one area where Mariota is able to use his legs. He doesn't have to think as much. So he's been fantastic under pressure this season, right? 43 passer rating. But you can get to him. Right, he's been pressured on 37% of his dropbacks. So I think it's key to be just very disciplined in your rush lanes, get pressure on him, then close the pocket and sack him, right? You don't want to just, like an Indian with no head, just going after him, because he is most effective when he's outside the pocket running and he doesn't have to think. So keep him in the pocket. Don't allow him to pick up cheap yards with his legs. And I think, you know, Jacksonville probably has a chance here defensively. But again, it starts with stopping Derrick Henry as well.
What an interesting game for, I'll say it, all the wrong reasons, to figure out if Jacksonville can get themselves up off the deck and get to 1-2. And the Titans, who thought that they were going to become one of the main beneficiaries with Andrew Luck's premature retirement, could find themselves 1-2 if they go down to North Florida and drop the game tonight. Worth watching, of course. Clearly not a massive must-see TV viewing party for those fantasy owners out there, players on either of those rosters. All right, Payne.
Now, what are you doing tonight? Are you watching this game or are you going out?
Am I going out? Me going out, as you can see how well I'm articulating myself, me going out on a Thursday night during football season means maybe I get to the gym and I watch the first half on the treadmill. That's exciting as my life gets. Now, I will probably go out tomorrow night with the college football game, because there is one very invested party in this particular household when it comes to USC against Utah.
You were supposed to be at that game. What happened? Screwed the pooch.
I was. Sometimes life gets in the way of the best laid travel plan. So unfortunately, I won't be at the Coliseum. Maybe at a USC-themed bar to try and see if the Trojans can pull off a big, big win on a short week against one of their Pac-12 South rivals.
I like it.
So we'll figure all that out. But 5 games, some of the biggest ones on the docket. As we continue to see the NFL season take shape and take form, we'll get a much better idea of who these teams are now and who they're going to be going forward. But one final order of business, Payne. Best bet last week, they did us dirty. We go under in the first half in Green Bay, Minnesota. Game completely dies, and full game under bettors were able to get to the window with relative ease compared to our slow start. So we bounce back with...
I thought the important thing you were going to ask me is what I was having for lunch. You want a best bet now?
Well, I mean, I can ask you. I mean, is it going to be Lara Bar? Is it going to be chicken with broccoli? I mean, well, what is on the Payne menu for a Thursday football?
I'm thinking I actually have a nice little turkey roast left over with sweet potatoes. I think that's what I'm going with. But
look at you over there. Regular Martha Stewart, buddy.
We're going back to the well. Home of the first half under. That didn't deter us. Although, geez, that was so frustrating. Game played out exactly how we thought it would for about 3 quarters. Unfortunately, not enough. But Sunday Night Football. Rams-Cleveland. Let's go with the first half under. 24. Obviously, it's a key number. It's at 24 across the board. It's the only number right now that's available. Do I like it as much at 23? No, I don't. So, I mean, right, we got a lot of these questions. It's vital that you are subscribed to the podcast. And I know we all have lives and you're doing different things and you're working and you're going to the gym, right? But at the end of the day, if you want to get these numbers, they are available, but you got to listen immediately, right? And thank you to you guys, because our listenership has grown exponentially, but you have to think about this logically, right? We you know, a six-figure listenership is listening to this and betting into this market. So if you think you're going to roll in at like 819, on Sunday night and think, you know, you're probably going to get the same number we're giving out now. It's probably not going to happen. So Rams, Browns, under 24 first half. That's what I like. We've kind of talked about it, right? I think both offensive lines have some question marks. The Rams right now aren't overly explosive. Baker Mayfield is getting Higgins back, but he's sailing some balls right now. So let's go with the first half under.
Dink Sunday Night Football. Dink and dunk our way to victory on Sunday Night Football. Payne, I'm pretty impressed.
Some potential weather there, too. Now, this isn't, you know, why we're, you know, that's not the main focus of this play, obviously. But check the forecast. You know, we're looking at about 15 to 17 mile an hour winds, some potential rain coming in as well. Something to monitor. That would only be an added bonus to this play.
Figure you were going to take a shot at West Coast quarterbacks having to play in weather. Do you want to get that off your chest before we go?
You know, sometimes golf may melt.
Oh, here we go.
With
all
rain.
Right, on that,
you,
and
you
that
don't
note,
know.
And that note, we bid all of you, our loyal listeners, a fond farewell.
Maybe the tips, maybe the frost on the tips comes out. You don't know.
Here we go. Here we go.
Let's get out of here.
Another week of podcasts in the book. Encourage you to go back, listen to the College Football Podcast on Wednesday. A massive slate in the college football side. Obviously, every game impactful in the National Football League when you have point spreads, totals, props. Plenty of ways to get yourselves to the window. But as far as our best bet, Rams and Browns, Sunday Night Football, first half under. The magic number is 24. And come, I don't know, about 10 o'clock Eastern time, 7 o'clock, we'll see you at the window.